For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
And I remember Ed Pickney. He was the assistant in Minnesota when Jimmy was there. And I remember one of the conversations I had with him. He said, let me tell you something. Don't believe anything you read. Jimmy Butler is the real deal. Okay, I see him every day. He's the real deal. Okay, all he wants to do is win. The connotation was that he was not a good team player, that he wasn't a guy that people could get along with. When all it was that intensity that he had no way to channel it until he came to the Heat.
Heat Nation, welcome back into Believe in Miami Heat. And I promised you after that that great James Posey interview last week that we'd have another Heat legend. You heard a little bit of a tease off the top. I'm going to bring him in here in just a second. But before we do that, I know we're all getting a little restless already. No basketball. We're not really sure when it's coming back. We're hoping January. We're hoping Christmas. But maybe mid-January we're seeing. But the good thing, Heat fans, NFL season is in full swing. And you might not be at the game. I'm not at the game. I'm not going to the game. Some people are, but you might not be. You could still be in on the action on Bet Online. Your boy was on the action this weekend. The Dolphins, favorites, maybe for the first time in my 33 years in existence. I don't know. -8.5 favorites against the Jets. Big number, but your boy hammered it. Won a little cash on Bet Online. Game spreads, game totals, team, player, coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any other place online. There's always the online casino as well. It never closes. So head to BetOnline.ag today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's BetOnline.ag. Sign up today. BetOnline is your online sportsbook experts. All right, guys. Here we go. We got a Heat lifer in the house. He's been an assistant. He's been a commentator. He's now an ambassador. He runs Heat camps. He's the coach. He's the most requested guest I have gotten on this podcast. The coach, Tony Fiorentino. Coach, thank you for joining me.
How you doing, Joey? That's great to hear. You should be my agent.
Hey, listen, I'm not even kidding. I grew up down here. I've been watching the Heat my whole life. And when I told people around here that I had this Heat podcast starting, I was expecting them to be like, go get D-Wade. Go get Zoe. Everyone was like, go get the coach. We want to hear from the coach. So
that's great.
And I've been watching you. I've seen you on the sidelines and listening to you my whole life. So it's great to have you on here.
Sure. It's my pleasure.
So look, we're going to talk about, I want to talk about your career, obviously, being with the Heat since the beginning. But first, let's talk about this team, right? It's just such an incredible story, such an incredible run. When you look at this championship run, for you, having seen all of every team that this franchise has had, if you could rank it, where would you put this season and this run in the history of the Heat franchise?
Yeah, 32 years of Heat. You know, you got the 4 years we were in the finals, won two of them. The first year of the Heat was so exciting when finally had basketball in South Florida and everybody was coming to a lot of people were coming to the games, transplanted Northeasterners like myself, and they were enjoying watching the other teams play Miami. And then they adopted the team. They saw the great job that Ron Rothstein did, the way the team hustled. So it goes back, you know, back to 1988. This year's team, I think, if you put it in a nutshell, we always hear about the culture and about the different ways they do things. They do things a little differently than other teams. It's not for everybody. But this year was the ultimate challenge of the Heat culture, because not only were they not expected to do anything, there were some people, and I call them pseudo-experts. They were, some of them were predicting before the season that when back in October, before the season started, no one had us in the top four. Some people had us 6, 7, 8. Some people didn't have us getting in the playoffs. Totally underestimating the program, the coaching, Jimmy Butler, and the great young talent we had blending with the veterans. And I know from the beginning, the Heat's goal was to have home court advantage in the first round, which meant that either Milwaukee, Toronto, Philadelphia, or Boston would not be in the top four. Everybody had them in the top four. And so a lot of people had Indiana 5, you know, somebody else 6. Miami wasn't in the mix. And so you could see by the confidence that they had that that was the goal that nobody else had for them. And then I think you could see early in the season there was something special happening, because if you recall, we won the home game. Jimmy Butler did not play. He had a baby. His wife had a baby. And so he missed the game. And then the Heat went to Milwaukee, played without Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
They had the game won, if you recall. There was a shot. It was short. Antetokounmpo put it back in at the buzzer to tie the game. And the Heat still won the game in overtime without Butler. So you could tell right there that there was something brewing there with that team. At least people should have noticed that, like I did, that even with young players, I remember Hero played well in that game, Kendrick Nunn, along with some veterans. There's something weird. Maybe this could be special. No one expected, you know, no one, I don't care anybody in the organization, myself, anybody didn't expect you to get to the finals. But you knew it was going to be a better, much better team than people thought. I think what happens in pro sports, Joey, is that any team, I don't care, hockey, football, basketball, baseball, on the professional level, the goal of any president or general manager, owner of those teams, is to have a blend of young players and veterans and to win while the rookies, the young players, are developing. And that's what happened with the Heat this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I love this because I love talking to coaches. I worked so just so you know, I worked in the NBA for a little bit. I was a video coordinator with the Grizzlies and the Hornets, and then I did the complete 180 and got into media. So I love talking to coaches, and you could tell just right off the bat, he's pulling like at a specific moment from the season where it's like, this is where we knew. And the only coaches bring back that that memory where it's just like pulling those moments. But you mentioned, obviously you mentioned Heat culture, and you mentioned Jimmy Butler. So I wanted to ask, outside of a guy like the guys like the obvious ones, Zoe, UD, even D Wade, is Jimmy, in terms of the history of this team, is he one of the guys that probably fits the Heat culture more than any player we've seen, obviously in a long time, but maybe one of in the history of the team, one of those guys that's just such a perfect fit for what that special culture is?
Well, he's right up there. You know, when we got Alonzo Mourning a month before the season started back in 1995, you knew that Pat Riley and Alonzo Mourning were joined at the hip. Well, it seems like the Heat culture and Jimmy Butler are joined at the hip. He's exactly, they've been searching for each other, it seems, especially Jimmy searching for the culture that he could thrive. And what it teaches you, among other things, besides basketball stuff, you shouldn't really judge a person by what you hear about them, because in the other three places where he played, he basically wanted everybody to have the passion he had. He wanted everyone to work as hard as he worked. And I remember Ed Pinckney, who played for the Heat. I coached against him in New York when he was at Stevenson High School in the Bronx. I was at Mount Vernon High School. Years later, I was assistant coach on Pat Riley's staff when Ed played. Real good friend. He was the assistant in Minnesota when Jimmy was there. And we would call each other now and then. And I remember one of the conversations I had with him. I don't know how we got on this conversation, but he said, let me tell you something. Don't believe anything you read. Jimmy Butler is the real deal. Okay, I see him every day. He's the real deal. Okay, all he wants to do is win.
Yeah.
And so the connotation was that he was not a good team player, that he wasn't a guy that people could get along with. When all it was that intensity that he had, he had no way to channel it until he came to the Heat. And you could see. And you know what was interesting about him? We got to go up and watch a couple of days of practice up in Boca, up in to watch the Heat in the preseason, in their training camp. And what you saw right away and into the exhibition season, Jimmy did not score a lot. Even in the two and a half hour practices up in Palm Beach. And then into the preseason, he wasn't scoring. And everybody's saying, well, what's wrong with Jimmy? Why isn't he scoring? What he was doing was assessing his team. He was trying to develop the confidence of his young guys, even way back then. I mean, the first thing he did when he got to Miami, he went to the gym at 4:30 in the morning. Told the hero, "You coming?" The guy calls you up and says, "You coming?" And you're going to say no? You know, so he showed his leadership right from the beginning. And so he didn't have to score in those times because he knew he could. And then early in the season, the team goes to Phoenix. He had 30 at halftime. So he showed that he could score if the team needed it. But he was all these other things. And he's one of those guys, he reminds me of Alonzo Mourning in a way, that he played every play at both ends of the floor with intensity. He played every play, in regular season, playoffs. It didn't matter. Reminds me of Udonis Haslem. Reminds me of Grant Long. Grant Long was the original guy back in when we first started. He was a starting power forward. And I don't remember in the 3 years that he was, more than 3 years, but first 3 years that he was there, I was at every practice. I was the assistant coach. And I never not saw him not play. I never saw him not play hard in anything, in any drill, in a game. And that's the way Alonzo Mourning was. And I'm sure that's the way Jimmy Butler is.
That's amazing. And you mentioned how he's in those practices where he wouldn't score, but then he comes out and he has those big games. He's so unique as a star player like that, because most people look at it and they're like, your star player always has to be the one scoring the ball. But he's shown that he didn't have to be. But in game three of the finals now, it's hard to say that a game in a series that you lost is the best game in franchise history, especially when there's the 2006 D Wade performance in the finals. But Jimmy Butler's game three performance it's got to be one of the greatest NBA finals performances in NBA history. I mean, I say that it's probably the best game for a single game by a player in a team when a team didn't win the finals. Like that's how good it was, right?
Well, Jerry West, many years ago, I think the Lakers lost to the Knicks, and Jerry West might have been the MVP on the losing team. Okay, so I mean, you got to go back to the 60s. Right. I was in the 60s, so late 60s. But what you're saying is true. What Jimmy Butler did, in my estimation, was right there with what Dwayne Wade did. Mm-hmm. The way and you might even say, you know, Dwayne Wade had a couple of Hall of Famers on his team. All right. Jimmy doesn't.
No, he
I don't think.
Not yet.
Right?
Not yet.
No, not yet. But so, you know, and he had young guys he had to carry. And it was interesting that you brought that up, because I was going to I was thinking about saying that. Here he is, a guy that likes to distribute the ball. He likes to rebound and get assists. But he realized in game three he had to score. Mm-hmm. And what does he do? He goes out and has a triple-double. You know, one of the best triple doubles in the history of the finals. And then he does it again almost in game five. He had another great game in game five, bordering on elimination at the end of that game. And, you know, and Eric Spoelstra has a way with words, just like Pat Riley. But Eric Spoelstra, I think, made the best quote I've ever heard. When they showed at the end of game five, near the end of game five, Jimmy Butler just got fouled and he's leaning over the railing.
Oh, yeah.
Coach Spo calls timeout. The next day, you know, after the game, the quote that Spo had that you read the next day is, "That is the image of a champion before he's a champion." To me, that's I don't know if you can say it better than that.
You can't. You can't. That it's incredible. It's incredible. And I guess, you mentioned Jerry West winning Finals MVP in a loss, and then I think LeBron almost did it against the Warriors. There are some people talking about, but other than that, man, that performance that Jimmy put on, man, for the only 40-point triple double in a win in the NBA Finals history, which is
if he did it again in Game Six and then lost in Game Seven, he might have had a shot.
He really would have. Yeah, because LeBron and AD were kind of splitting until LeBron went off, right?
Right.
The other guy, obviously, pretty young team, but Goran was so important to this team, and he has been. I think he goes sort of under the radar, where he may end up ranking in team history in terms of all-time Heat players. I mean, he's top 10 in scoring. He's going to be top 5 if he comes back next year and assists all-time in history of the team. He's 6th in points per game, just behind LeBron, Wade, Shaq, Glenn Rice, Bosch, and Tim Hardaway in terms of players in a Heat jersey. And I think he's been one of the, I guess, calming influences, or, you know, the influence over the last 5 years that's been sort of up and down. He's one of those guys that you can count on for the Heat. How important has he been to the organization over this stretch to get back here? Obviously, we know how important he was this year. He led the team in scoring in the playoffs. But just over this time, what he's meant to the organization since LeBron left and they sort of started the rebuild.
Well, you know, when we traded for him, I remember Eric Reed asked me on the air, what do you think of the trade? I said, I love the trade. Because you learn about people when you play against them. And the one of the great perks of announcing is that most of the time you're sitting courtside. And as a coach, former coach, I like to watch guys' reactions. I like to see different situations, looking off the ball. There's a lot of things that a coach sees that a lot of fans don't see because they're watching the ball a lot. And I loved his competitiveness, his toughness. He's one of those European guys that was playing at a very young age on a very high level in Europe. And then in the NBA, he was underrated. He did make the All-Star team 1 year, I believe. All-NBA 13 before we got him.
Right.
And so now that he's here and you see him every day, his competitiveness, his strength, and his mental toughness, I believe, and, you know, you don't want to, you got to be careful how you say this because you don't want to make excuses. Injuries are part of the game. I truly believe that if the Heat had a healthy Dragic the last 3 minutes of game four, when it was a 2-point game, that obviously we would have had a much better chance to win that game, especially with the way he played down the stretch. You didn't have just Jimmy as a veteran. You had Dragic, okay? And he had shown in the previous games how good he can be in the fourth quarter. So, and then, it, you know, obviously Bam didn't get hurt. But Dragic, he's right up there. You know, the two best point guards in Heat history, without a doubt, Tim Hardaway and Goran Dragic.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can't go wrong there. You also mentioned the difference between D Wade's championship, all the championship teams, and the team that Jimmy took to the finals this year is no, you know, no current Hall of Famers. But to me, I spoke on local radio before the playoffs. They asked me about the Heat playing against Indy. And I said that I thought that this in these playoffs, Bam Adebayo would become a household name. And I think he's shown, he may not be complete every household, but he's in a lot of households now. I think Bam is a top 10 talent-wise player in the NBA and can be a franchise player for this team for a long time. Does he, is that sort of the feel? Like, is this the plan for him to, well, I don't want to get into the plan, but obviously the feeling around the organization that he could be that type of franchise player for a long time.
Well, there's no ceiling for him. And if they didn't know who he was, everyone found out in game six against Boston. Okay? Mm-hmm. I don't know if he can have a better game than that. And going, you hope that there's games coming up. You know, he's got a long way to go. He's going to have games like that. Now, he was so perfect in that game.
And coming off an injury, too.
Yeah, coming off an injury. He was unbelievable. He really was. And there's, what the Heat do are very good at, and Spoelstra is very good at, whenever they ask about players and what can they be, they always the word is always, the sentence always is, we don't put a ceiling on it. We just work as hard as we can, okay? And we're going, what the Heat's going to do is they're going to get the most out of the player's talent. Now, I told Tyler Hero this. When the fortunate thing that we have is when we have Heat camp, we're going to have it this summer, obviously. When Hero was drafted, he made his first public appearance at Heat Camp. And this applies to Bam, too. And I said to Hero when I introduced him, with all the reporters around, they wanted to talk to him, with all the kids in camp, that there's one reason why you're going to be a great player in this league. And it applies to Bam, too. I said, you're the high draft pick. You got a work ethic, all that stuff. I said, but the main reason you're going to be a very good player in this league, you had an Italian coach at Kentucky.
Hey, there you go. That'll do it. That must be what it is. That's why Cal gets him in and gets all these kids in
can't
here.
Can't tell I'm Italian.
Actually, I'm glad you brought up Tyler because he was the other one. There's no ceiling there either, right? I mean, that kid is. I was shocked because when I watched him in the bubble in the restart, there were games where I was just like, he's still a rookie. The game's still a little bit sped up for him. it's going to take a little bit. And then the playoffs come, and this kid, and he's, I don't know that I've seen just like within 10 games, the type of jump he made from those last eight games of the regular season to the playoffs. I think the Heat are in such a unique position with Bam and Tyler that there's all this talk about who's going to be there in the next couple of years and who's coming in and this and that. But the Heat have two guys who could be the two best players on a really good team for a long time to come with Tyler and Bam.
Well, what's interesting about it is I don't dispute that. Jimmy Butler's only 30, 31 years old.
Right.
So he's got he's in the prime of his career now, you know. But you're right. I think that there should have been an inkling that something like this would happen because he lived in Wisconsin and verbally committed to Wisconsin, very good basketball program, Big Ten, right? And disavowed himself and went to Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing he was going to be, family was going to be harassed, he was going to be, you know, very difficult thing. It's tough for us to understand that, but he did it because he thought he'd become a better player going to Kentucky. And so, but you have to have a lot of confidence in yourself to do that. And so it showed in the biggest moments. He made some of his biggest shots throughout the playoffs. You got to live with some of the recklessness that you see. There's a little bit of recklessness there, but that's because he's so energetic and he's so confident that he's going to refine that as he goes along. Sometimes he dribbles in traffic and he loses the ball. That he'll learn.
Mm-hmm.
But what he did overall was unbelievable in the clutch. He made some clutch baskets. He had that one run in one of the games. I don't even remember who it was against. He went off in like the third quarter, the fourth quarter in another game. He's a big time talent. But the best thing about him and Bam is that they have an unbelievable work ethic. And they listen. And it's one thing for a coach to try to teach a player something. They've got to have the fortitude to understand what they're being taught and then apply it. And they both have that. They both go on the court and they try to apply what the coaches tell them. And they work at it. And I said this when I was announcing, and maybe some people thought I was being generous with this because I'm a Heat announcer and I'm friends with all the coaches, good friend with Spo. I said, we have arguably the best teaching staff in the NBA. Because what they do is they figure out what you need to work on. Each guy's different, okay? They pinpoint what they need to work on. They tell the player what they need to work on. And then they go work on it. And they hound it. And they get it. And they get it. I guarantee you, just on the same discussion now, that Duncan, okay, Robinson, will become a better ball handler, okay? He already refined got his game to another level in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Moving without the ball, handling a little bit defensively, he's going to be a better defender and a better ball handler because the Heat are going to make him that way, and he's going to make himself that way with the teaching, with the coaching.
Oh, yeah. You took the words out of my mouth. Duncan, I think, there's no better example than what Duncan has become after being undrafted and, you know, not even playing. He played a little bit last year, but this year just taking it to another level, and even, like you said, in the playoffs, his game off the dribble, even in those dribble handoff game with Bam, those like JJ Redick style pocket, he's made this type of evolution that JJ made at one point in his career. He's starting to make that already, where he went from just a straight up shooter to now he can take one or two dribbles. Mm-hmm. He can make that pocket pass to Bam. So it makes him such a threat that he wasn't before. And I think that's obviously a credit to the Heat coaching staff.
You can't underestimate how great the Heat scouting department is. Because, everybody's looking for talent. Everybody's looking for certain things in their program. The Heat look for other things as well. They look for people that are going to fit into the culture, that are going to work. There are players who don't want to work. There are players that came out with that who have said that in the past. I don't want to go to the Heat. I got to work too hard. Okay, well, then you're not going to get the most out of your ability. All right? So it's one thing to identify people like him and a person like Bam, who played 1 year of college and is very raw when he comes to you, and see the upside and know that they're gonna work hard to get there.
Mm-hmm.
There are players that could have had better careers or have better careers in the NBA today, but they're not willing to work at it.
Right.
Okay, and that means it's a full 100% commitment. I wouldn't be surprised. I think they showed a thing on Twitter where it looked like Jimmy Butler was in the gym the next day after they lost game six. I don't know if that's true or not, but it wouldn't surprise you if he was. Okay. Yeah. Same thing with Bam. You know, you just love the work ethic. You love the symbiotic relationship between players who want to work hard, that have talent that can raise it to another level, and the way that he can get it there.
Let me ask you this about Jimmy. If Jimmy brings, your dog's getting excited for
my
this.
My dogs are getting excited.
Loves the interview. I love the interview. Yeah. It's great. He's getting excited. If Jimmy brings Big Face Coffee to Miami, are you paying $20 for a cup?
You know, if it helps the program, I would. I'm a coffee drinker.
I might
try it once.
One time. Yeah, one time's enough.
I might try it once. $20 is a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot for one time. Yeah,
you
for
pay
sure.
$5, $6 now. Whoever thought you'd pay $5, $6, $7 at
sure.
a Starbucks? But,
yeah.
You know. It is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so now I want to go back a little bit. Obviously, everyone knows, been with the team from the beginning, started as an assistant coach, moved into commentary. We talk about Heat culture all the time. Was there a moment along your run with the team where Heat culture really became a thing? I know you mentioned that it's always been a hardworking franchise from the beginning, and you mentioned Grant Long and guys like that, but was there a moment where it sort of clicked where you're like, all right, the Heat culture, this is different, and this is a real thing down here.
Well, to be honest, the first 3 years we had it with Coach Rothstein, you know, Ronnie Cicely was the most improved player in the NBA his second year, and then arguably had the best footwork of any big man in the NBA. He didn't have that the first year. And so that summer, between the first and second year, Ron Rothstein, Dave Wall, and I, Dave was the other assistant, we worked at 5 days a week with the players in the gym. Ronnie was there, and you know, we had a young team. We had six rookies the first year, so we had a very young team, and there was a big upside to guys who wanted to work, and Ronnie wanted to work. And so I think for the first 3 years we did have that work ethic. Not everybody on the team, okay, I won't mention any names, but you know, some we had it with most of the guys. And then it got away a little bit until Pat Riley came. And then once Pat Riley came, you know, one of the things he told us as a staff, just to give you an example, in the summer, he said, look, you guys work it out. We were over at LaSalle for 3 years before the arena was built. And as a coaching staff, he said to us, look, you guys work out if you want vacation days or whatever, but I'd like two coaches here every day till 3 o'clock. Whoever that is, you guys work it out. Mm-hmm. I want the players to know that they can come here anytime between like 8:30 in the morning and 3 o'clock, and there'll be somebody here to work with them. And that's what we had. You know, it was with Stan Van Gundy, and it was with Jeff Buzdelic and Bob McAdoo, guys like that, okay? And so it worked, and Coach Spoelstra would get involved. It's a great story about Coach Spoelstra. We were over at LaSalle, and we were working out a player for the draft. No, a free agent. I think we're working out a free agent. And Gary Brokaw was the player personnel guy at Orlando. Gary played in the league, went to Notre Dame. I worked for him for 2 years at Iona College when he was the head coach before I came to Miami. So the Heat allowed him to come and watch the workout, which was unusual. So we were in the gym, and Eric Spoelstra worked out the guard. And they go about a hard 45 minutes. They're going up and down the floor. They're playing one-on-one. You know, they're really going at it. So after they worked out, Gary Brokaw comes up to us and says, who's the other guy? He meant Spoelstra. He came to watch the one guy play, and he was impressed with Spoelstra.
That's incredible. That's amazing.
That's a good story.
That's an amazing story. You know what's so funny is, I hear you tell that story about Pat and the workout schedule, and it kind of shows his, I feel like, you know, you hear about coaching trees and this type of thing. My last year in Charlotte, or my last couple of years in Charlotte, I worked for Steve Clifford, who was with the Van Gundys, who come from Pat.
Yes.
And I'll tell you what, not to bang on anything that happened in Charlotte, but I was there for the 7-win season. I was there through some rough times, and then Cliff comes in and does the same thing. He says the coaches, someone has to always be here. I don't really care who. He said the same thing. Don't care who it is, but someone's got to be here. And then we make the playoffs for the first time in 10 years.
He's so very good. Yeah, he's in Orlando now. He's very good coach.
Great coach, but I think it just even goes even more to show the path that way, right? There is a way to be successful without blowing things up and doing all these things that if you can build a culture a certain way, you can have a level of success. Obviously, the talent evaluation and player development goes a long way as well. But the culture, it starts with having a system. And I hear you tell that Pat Riley story. It just sort of sparked me that like it's still happening with certain teams and coaches now.
Yeah. I think for years, people in the league kind of knew that we had a great off-season program and that our players and seemed to get better from whenever the last game of the last season was to the first practice of the next game, the next season. The story I love to tell about Dwayne Wade is that after his rookie year, when Dwayne Wade came in the league, he didn't have a jump shot. It's hard to remember that now, but he was going to the basket and he was throwing his body at the floor and that body, people were concerned that he wasn't going to last long as he could because he was always throwing his body out there. So after he went to the Olympics in Greece, 2004, after his rookie year, he came back to the gym and at the arena, and he worked with Eric Spoelstra and assistant coach 5 days a week. And they worked on two things, balance and extending his arm on a jump shot. Three things happen on every shot. You bend your knees and extension of the arm. The last part of that is the follow through. Lift, extend, follow through. Okay. Dwayne did not get the extension on his jump shot. He was shooting from here. He's pushing it. So he worked with Spoelstra 5 days a week. They went for about a month doing that. Dwayne Wade didn't average less than 22, 23 a game for the rest of his career till the end. Was an all-star every year. And when he combined a mid-range jump shot with going to the basket, it became impossible to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see the relationship between Eric Spoelstra and Dwayne Wade, the way they meshed, because it was a perfect match. Because Dwayne needed that, and Coach Spoelstra knew exactly what to do to get him to the next level. And that's how we, and obviously, Hall of Fame career.
Yeah. Speaking of Spo, was there a point with him, obviously starting in the video room, becoming an assistant coach, was there a point where you knew that he would not only be a head coach, but that you had an inkling that maybe he could be, in my estimation, if he's not the best coach in the NBA currently, the only guy I could put ahead of him is Pop. And I think he's just sort of grandfathered into number one at this point because he's Pop. But I mean, was there something you saw in Spo early on?
The video coordinator, the assistant coaches work with the video coordinator. Very often, sometimes the head coach doesn't even know who the video coordinator is, or his name. Mm-hmm. He knows who he is, but...
Oh, I know.
We deal
with him. I remember.
Yeah,
I remember.
Right? So the assistant coaches deal with him. And what we knew, I found out real early how a smart coach was, Eric is, when we would go scout somebody, come back with a report. He would put it together with us, make a video, but he always added something to it from a game he watched that we didn't see. So he was in the video room and he watched the game. He saw a couple of things in there that we didn't see in the two games that we saw. And you knew right away. One of the things that Pat Riley did when he came, he asked me about the video guy. He said, is he a video guy? Is a video guy a guy? Is he a computer guy learning basketball, or is he a basketball guy learning computers? I said, no, coach, he's a basketball guy. Okay. He's very sharp. And then he showed it, and then as the years went on, he even took it to another level with his intelligence, and Stan Van Gundy's the one that put him on the bench. Okay. And then, as an assistant coach, he got more involved in the game preparation and all that stuff. And you could see it. And, he's taking it to another level now. I find it a little amusing. I was saying for years that he's on a fast track to the Basketball Hall of Fame. And nobody would acknowledge it. Now, these people that watched him in the playoffs, they're going to come out with a revelation.
Spo, obviously, I agree. And I think part of that is that's the LeBron effect a little bit, right? LeBron wins a title, the coach doesn't get a ton of credit because they say it was a LeBron team. So I think now that people saw this, it's going to open their eyes to something they should have been open to a long time ago, which is Eric Spoelstra is that good of a coach.
If I recall, Phil Jackson had Michael Jordan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Kobe
you
Bryant.
You don't win without talent.
And Kobe Bryant and Shaq. Matter too.
You don't win without talent. Come on.
I was looking back at some of the old Heat teams, and you talk about building roster construction and building and talent evaluation and that type of stuff. It's almost like even back in the night, like when Pat Riley first got to the team, when the Heat were building a roster, right? Like that 96-97 team that went to the conference finals and lost to those Bulls, were first in the league in three-pointers attempted and first in the league in three-pointers made, which, by the way, in today's NBA would have been last place, but that's neither here nor there. First in the league in threes made and attempted, and you look at that roster, right? Tim Hardaway, Vashawn Leonard, Dan Majerle, Jamal Mashburn, Zoe. You're talking about all shooters. PJ obviously was the four, but in today's NBA, right, you got four guys who can all shoot the ball, and then Zoe at the five. That's a roster you look at that could play in today's game, and that's 20 something years ago. So it feels like it's always been that way, building rosters down here in Miami.
Yeah, when you talk about that 96-97 team, I think it's one of only two or three teams in the history of the NBA, 74 years, that a team won over 60 games but didn't win 30 at home. That team was 32-9 on the road. Mm. Okay? We won more games on the road that year than we won at home. 32-9 on the road. I remember we went out. I remember after one of the games, we were getting ready to go on a six-game road trip. And I'm standing next to Alonzo Mourning in the old arena in the locker room. And Pat Riley's been interviewed. And the reporter says, Coach, he goes, you're going on a six-game road trip. What's a good record? 4-2, 5-1? Pat Riley just looked at him and says, I want to win them all. And Alonzo Mourning looked at me and said, that's why I love the man. And we went out and went 6-0 on that West Coast trip.
Unbelievable.
That was that team, the team that won 32 games on the road.
It's crazy. It's amazing. I look at that roster, I'm just like, man, that team could play now. So, all right, I really appreciate your time. I have two or three more questions about your commentating career that I want to throw at you. So, yeah, baby. Was that an organic thing, or was that planned? Like, you knew, I have to have something to say. They hit a big shot. It just happened?
I'm an emotional guy, you know, and I had to be careful not to step over Eric. The play-by-play guy is the one that has to make the call at the end of the game in a great play, because you want to keep it for posterity. So I had to always wait for it. At the beginning, I didn't do that, and then I learned to do it. I really enjoyed the 15 years that I did it. I'm very proud of the year that we won 15 games for us, from our standpoint, because if you turned on the TV and you watched the Heat play, you wouldn't know from our broadcast, with the energy that we brought, the preparation, not just Eric and I and me, but Jason Jackson, the truck, the Fox Sports Sun truck. They everybody brought it every night, even though we only won 15 games. And so I was very proud of all of us that we brought it. We were excited when things happened. We fell short. You got to give the reasons. And one of the things that Eric and I tried to do in the 15 years that I was his partner, we didn't want to sugarcoat anything. Obviously, we wanted the Heat to win. And you could tell we were rooting for the Heat, because we are employees of the Heat and all of that stuff. But we tried to be fair to the other team as well. And we tried to be fair to the officials. And so I'm proud of the fact that there were coaches near the end of my announcing career, there were coaches that came up to the two of us when we interviewed them before the game and said they really appreciate us being honest about what's going on. And some referees came up to us and said they appreciated the fact that when we said something and it wasn't right, we corrected ourselves. And when we showed the replay, the ref got it right. And so they really enjoyed it. So it was a combination of a lot of things. I would do that job for free if I was independently wealthy. That's how much I enjoyed it.
That's amazing.
And I miss doing the games with Eric. I miss that.
Yeah, you and Eric. So having at that point when you took over, you guys had obviously been with the organization, both of you, since the beginning. So was it a pretty smooth transition to just sitting there and talking to a friend?
Yeah. About that? I learned a lot from Eric, how to be an announcer. you got to do the open, which was the hardest thing to do with the film that they show and stuff. And you, when you get comfortable with that, the game itself was the easiest thing. You're trying to tell the people, the fans, show them things that that are in the mind of what's in the mind of the coach. Whenever something happened on the court, I had to try to figure out why did the coach do that. There's always a reason, okay? And Eric and I were proud of the fact that when we did it for 15 years, we were the only announcing duo in the NBA. We were in our 30th year when I ended it and moved into something else with the Heat. We were the only announcing duo in the NBA that were with the team since its inception. So the great thing for the fans was that we could, either one of us can bring up something that happened in year 2, 5, 18, 20, 24, it didn't matter. We were there. You know, like when we beat the Chicago Bulls in the old arena with 8 guys. I was a coach in the locker room. You know, and I could say, I gave a little paraphrase of what Coach Riley said to the team that night. You know, so these are, so it gave great insight for the fans to understand what's going on behind the scenes. So that part of it we really enjoyed. And Eric's one of the best play-by-play guys in the NBA. So, I truly think Jason Jackson is the best courtside reporter in the NBA. And I may be biased, but from what I see, he's really cool.
Oh yeah,
so
they're incredible.
We had
yeah.
a moment, so it was really a lot of fun. And now I'm an ambassador.
Right.
They told me I was an ambassador. I said I got to go look up how to spell it.
And run it. And running the Heat camps too, right?
Yeah, I've always run the Heat camps.
Right.
So we do that. We have Junior Heat now, which we're getting all of the all of the kids that want to play basketball and all of the organizations in South Florida. We want to put them all under one umbrella, the Miami Heat umbrella, the Junior Heat umbrella. Mm-hmm. We have in a normal situation during the season, we have a clinic every once a month in the practice gym when the team's on the road. We have a winter camp and a spring camp, 5 days. We have 8 weeks of camp over the summer, and we started an anti-bullying campaign. We went into schools. We went into about 35 schools last couple of years, each year. It got thwarted a little bit because we had to end it in March. But we go in with the Detroit Championship Trophy, and we talk about kindness, and we've teamed up with this group from New York, Bridget Company, where I'm doing something Friday. I was on earlier on Zoom with that. We're going to go on Zoom, we're going to do a school. We're going to talk to a bunch of kids, 300 eighth graders, about the idea of kindness and overcoming adversity and perseverance, and related to what the Heat did in the bubble because of COVID. And so when you can use the Heat as an example, it really helps because most of them are into the Heat. They love the sport, sure. Especially now with what we did. Okay, they had Dwayne Wade was the guy all those years. Now look what we did. And so we're trying, and we make it a contest. How many kind deeds can you do? They compete against each other for how many kind deeds they can do. And
that's
so
awesome.
That's what we're into now. And I'm a former high school teacher.
Yeah.
So it blends right into what I did before.
Yeah, I meant to ask you about that. Like the transition from going to being an assistant or a high school coach to being an NBA coach, what? It was like a 2 year, it was like 2 years.
Yeah, I was a head coach for 8 years at my alma mater, Mount Vernon. And we had a lot of talent. We had 9 guys who played in the NBA. Mm. The latest one was Ben Gordon.
Right. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I know Ben. Ben was with us for 2 years, I think, when I was in Charlotte. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and then I was 2 years at Iona, and I came here as an assistant on the original staff. So it's all coaching, though. It's like when I was on the air, I felt like I was coaching.
Sure.
And I tried to make it sound like we were sitting there having a soda or something and was just talking about the game. You know,
yeah.
In fact, I go over a family's house sometimes. I did during the finals, during the playoffs. And there's a bunch of there were kids there. Got kids who are in their 20s who were in camp. Some of them were in camp. And I was giving some commentary while we were watching the game. You know, tell them little things to look for. I enjoyed it, and they enjoyed it. So it's pretty cool.
Coach is coach, man. You know, when it's in your blood for that long, you find yourself doing it, whether you realize it or not. You're just coaching. Last question for you. I wanted to ask you about. So when I was in Memphis, I worked for Coach Holland, and in training camp, one of my great experiences. And this was such a small moment, but I'll always remember it because it was just. I just loved it so much because at the time I was, you know, I wanted to be a coach before I transitioned into media. Right. And at training camp after practice one day, Gene Bartow, late Gene Bartow, and the late Dr. Jack Ramsey were visiting, and they were in our lunchroom with us. And it was Lionel and the assistants and me just listening to Gene and Jack just tell war stories. Boy. And they just talked for 45 minutes and everyone just listened. And you know, a room full of coaches, it's hard to get everyone to just sit and listen. Everybody's, you know, especially during lunch, everyone wants to chat. Everyone was locked in. Dr. Jack seemed like, I know you came into commentating after he left, but obviously you were with the organization the time he was there. He just seemed like such an incredible man when I met him. And
one of the great people of all time. You know, there's no doubt about that. He was such a great person. He had such an incredible basketball mind that I just love talking basketball with him. Guys like him and Pat Riley, they say things in passing that are revelations.
That's amazing. You know, that's so true. Yeah.
It is. You know, they say things, you know, like when Pat Riley came here, I called up Jeff Van Gundy. I said, Jeff, I want to be on his staff. Tell me something. He goes, well, he told me some things and he goes, let me give you a word of advice. Have a pen and paper with you at all times, pen and pad, because you're going to want to write down things that he says to the team. You're not going to remember it all because he says things in passing that you'd pay money to hear at a clinic, you know, and Jack Ramsey was the same way.
Yeah.
Now, Gene Bartow, he coached at UCLA before he went to Alabama, Birmingham. He was around forever.
Yep.
So that must have been great for you. And, you know, Lionel Hollins, great story. One quick story. The only time I thought about leaving the Heat, because I wasn't sure where I stood, 2 years after Pat Riley was here, my contract was up. It was 7 years. It was 9 years into the Heat. He came here after year seven. After year seven. It was 9 years. After 9 years, my contract was up. Brian Hill offered me the first assistant's job in Vancouver.
Ah.
Okay, 2 year contract in Vancouver. Stu Jackson was the general manager. And I didn't really want to go, but I didn't know where I stood. But then Pat Riley gave me a contract and I stayed because I wanted to stay.
Mm.
But the reason I bring it up is after I turned down the job, Lionel Hollins took it.
Wow.
He became the assistant coach for Brian Hill. And in the third year that Brian Hill was in Vancouver, he was let go. And Lionel became the head coach and then stayed as the head coach when they moved to Memphis.
That's incredible. That's amazing how
that
works.
I think it's his birthday today.
Really?
I saw it on Twitter.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think it's his birthday. His picture's on Twitter today.
Okay. Got it. Yeah, that's an incredible story. I would never have known
that. He's a good man. Yeah, he was on that championship team with Jack Ramsey in 77. Right, yeah. Won an NBA championship, and he's a very good coach.
Yeah, people don't realize, I think, you know, losing when you're working in the NBA is the worst. But then there's some things that come out of it, like my time in the NBA. I mean, I was only in Memphis for 2 years, so I was with Lionel. But then in Charlotte, I was with Larry Brown. I was with Paul Silas, you know, Steve Clifford, as I mentioned. So you get to come across. I wish somebody would have given me that advice in my career when I was young to carry around that pad, because
you get a notebook, man.
Those guys, the stories that I could tell at this point, if I just had them all written down, would be amazing. But
how about Chris Wallace in Memphis? Did you enjoy him? He was great. He was quote, the unofficial player personnel director with the Heat for 3-4 years.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Went there.
Yeah.
Yeah. We worked together.
Yeah. That time in Memphis was
Lockery was the coach.
Yep. That was an interesting one too, because that was the year where we had Allen Iverson for like 3 months, well, 3 months total. And we started 1-8, and there was rumors that Lionel was going to get fired if we lost the next game. And then they cut AI, and we went and had like, I think, the second or third best record like in the West up all the way through All-Star break. And it was the year that every team in the West won 50 games.
Yeah.
We barely missed the playoffs that year. And Lionel was like, it was that little difference in AI.
So you root for John Morant, huh?
I'm not, you know what? I've gotten to the point. I know I love the Heat, but I still root, you know, it's just like when you're in the league for so long and you work with guys, you just root for their success. So I was happy to see Lionel get the ring. I mean, I'm always happy to see my guys, you know, have success, even though he wasn't in the bubble. It's cool seeing your guys do well. So, but coach, I could sit here. I could talk to you all day, but I know you got more important things to do than talk with me, but
I got to feed my dogs. No,
I appreciate your time. This was incredible. Sure. And I hope to have you back on at some point, and good luck the rest of the off season. And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it, Joey. It was fun. Thank you. Ciao.
What an amazing interview. Just two for two, back-to-back weeks. James Posey, now the coach, joins Believe in Miami Heat. And what just the incredible stories. Pat Riley, Jimmy Butler, talking that story that he told that I played off the top about talking to Ed Pickney and knowing that Jimmy Butler was the guy from the beginning, and the way he talks about Bam and Tyler and the future. It's got to get Heat fans excited, because this team, it's such an exciting team, and hearing from a Heat lifer like Tony Fiorentino this early on in the podcast, it's exciting, and I really appreciate how much time he gave me. And you know, hopefully we'll get him back on in the future. By the way, the coach is a good Twitter follow. At Tony Heat 3x, like 3x, WC. A little complicated name, but at Tony, his name. Heat, H-E-A-T, 3XWC. Tony, just look up Tony Fiorentino. Good Twitter follow. Go follow him. You can also follow me at Joseph R. Levin. A little easier if you enjoy the pod. The hits keep coming next week. Going to have another big guest. So stay tuned. And, you know, as always, don't forget.
Heat Nation.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.